This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. They've already started to push the panic button in Baton Rouge over their LSU Tiger baseball team. We'll get in line, New Orleans Pelicans fans, because as the Pels continue their free fall at home, it's time to push the panic button. That's okay. LSU has a chance to right the ship starting today as Vandy comes to town and the Pels get to welcome Wemby on Friday. All these stories and much, much more coming your way today on another absolutely drop-dead gorgeous Chamber of Commerce Day, this Thursday, April the 4th, the year 2024. My main man, James Mesh, back in the Master Control Suite inside the EVCO Development Studios, which are on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Head west, ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles. Thrilled to be there. Streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN Southwest Louisiana.com. Mike's Marine Hotline, open and available at 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Banned cell phones. A Tuesday unlikely full-scale scrimmage. Jay Johnson trying to put out all the stops as they try to end this four-game slide and try to finally win a series in the SEC. 2-7 overall, Vandy, the seventh-ranked team in the country, will take on the 18th-ranked Tigers in a best-of-three starting tonight. Bill Franquez, our LSU baseball insider, will preview the series. Meanwhile, the Pelicans continue their free fall, losing last night 117-108 to the Orlando Magic that dropped the Pels to 45-31 overall and to seventh place in the Western Conference standings. Just 10 days ago, the Pelicans were in fourth place with hopes of hosting game one of a first round playoff series for the first time since 2008. Heck, they were even talking about a 50-win season, a feat that's happened just once in franchise history. It's still in reach, but would take a 5-1 finish, 5 wins, 1 loss finish, which is very unlikely the way the Pels are reeling right now. We'll talk about that. LSU football back on the practice field. Matthew Bruni will join us at around 1:30 this afternoon, and Blake Baker, defensive coordinator, shared some thoughts, mentioned some names. We'll get those from Matthew Bruni. After a couple of quiet weeks, the New Orleans Saints dipped back into free agency to sign their second linebacker in this cycle. They're signing former Washington Commanders linebacker Malachi Hudson to a one-year deal. Hudson's coming off a career year for the Commanders, who selected him out of Michigan in the fifth round of the 2020 draft. He set career highs across the board in Washington last year, starting 8 games, making 74 tackles and 2 pass breakups. His biggest contribution, though, is on special teams. And you know how the Saints love their special teamers. Meanwhile, around the world, the Boston Celtics blew out the Thunder 135-100 to secure the NBA's best record, 60 wins and only 16 losses, and a home court advantage throughout the playoffs. The biggest threat to UConn's title defense might be air travel. The Huskies' flight to Arizona was delayed 7 hours due to mechanical issues. Welcome to life on the road. Planes, trains, and automobiles didn't get to their hotel in Phoenix till around 4:30 a.m. Desert time. It was a fun night at Fight Night, if you like that. In the NHL, the Rangers and Devils dropped gloves right after the puck dropped at Madison Square Garden and engaged in a 5-on-5 brawl that resulted in 8 ejections. Holy cow. Justin Thomas, as we are 1 week away from the start of the Masters, stunned the golf world by announcing that he's parting ways with caddy Jim Bones McKay. Marcus Mariota, who signed a one-year deal with the Commanders this season, will be the first NFL quarterback to wear the number zero. And the Orioles' top-ranked farm system put on a show with the Norfolk Tides of AAA hanging 26 runs on the Charlotte Knights, the White Sox affiliate. Speaking of unusual occurrences, never even heard about this. The most surprising 50-piece in NBA history. A dude named Malachi Flynn exploded for 50 points off the bench in the Pistons' 121-113 loss to the Atlanta Hawks last night. 50 points, 18 of 25 from the field, 5 of 9 from downtown, 9 of 12 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals in 34 minutes. Flynn entered the game with a career scoring average of 5.2 points per game. That's the lowest for any 50-point scorer in NBA history. The only player with more points off the bench in NBA history, Jamal Crawford with 51. Never heard of this guy. Don't know who he is, but he's got more 50-point games than Magic, Isaiah, Scottie, Clyde Frazier, Kevin Garnett, Bill Russell. Got more than all of them. Holy smokes. That is some kind of crazy. We talked yesterday, Angel Reese declaring for the WNBA. Still no word on Haley Van Lith, whether she's going to come back to LSU, go to the WNBA, or hit the transfer portal yet again. Only time will tell on that one. So here's our guest list for the day. You ready for this one? We are stacked. Bill Franquez on the LSU Vanderbilt series coming up here in just a few minutes. Matthew Bruni on all other things. What LSU football practice was like today. What did Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator, have to say? Then we'll go up to the top of the hour, the 2 o'clock hour, the arguably one of the greatest, not even arguably, he's one of the greatest baseball players to ever play at LSU. Todd Walker will join us to share his thoughts on how can LSU right the ship and get moving in a positive direction. Is it too late? It's never too late, right? Never too late. And then as we are getting closer and closer to the NFL draft and how the Houston Texans are seem to be pushing all their chips into the table for C.J. Stroud, getting Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon and others, Frank Schwab will join us and get his thoughts on what has transpired since the end of the Super Bowl experience to now with the NFL draft coming up later on this month. So that's where we stand today with our program on this Thursday, April the 4th. So without further ado, let me introduce my extraordinary producer, Mr. James Mesh. Good afternoon, sir. How are you? How about them Pelicans? Well, no. How about them Smellicans? Man, they need Brandon Ingram back in a big time way because they can't score without him.
Yeah, they're definitely on the struggle bus. And coincidentally, that is also our poll question of the day, Jordy. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament? Right now, they are the 7 seed. So if it were to start today, they would currently have to play for it. Now, they would have 2 chances to secure a spot in the playoffs, but the whole point was to avoid it altogether. 67% have said no, but there is that 33 1/3% that have said yes, that they still will be able to avoid it. Got 6 games to go. We'll have to see.
Well, let's see. Let's see where the Pels are right now. They've got, as you said, 6 games to go, currently in the 7th spot. They have a magic number for a playoff berth of 6. Their remaining schedule is San Antonio this Friday. Then they go on the West Coast at Phoenix, at Portland, at Sacramento, at Golden State, and they close things out on a Sunday against the LA Lakers. The strength of schedule is 0.466, so it's far less than the record of the Phoenix Suns, who are at a 64% remaining strength of schedule, which is the hardest in the West. You can forget about catching the Mavericks. You got to worry about Phoenix. You got to worry about Sacramento, who has a 56% remaining strength of schedule. That's the second hardest in the West. And believe it or not, you got to watch out for the LA Lakers, who are at a 56% remaining strength of schedule. Pelicans have the tiebreaker over the Clippers and the Kings. So six games ago, all of them important. Cannot believe they came out with a lack of energy and a lack of pizzazz against Orlando. But I told you, some teams just have their have your number. No matter what their record is, they just always seem to play good against you. And Orlando is that team against the Pelicans. Wow. So they're 45-31. They go 5-1. They get to 50 wins. Can they do it? Anything's possible. But boy, they need to get going and get going in a hurry. All right, continue to vote on X and on Facebook. We'll take a timeout here when we return. Ooh, is it a must time opportunity for LSU baseball? I say yes. Bill Franquez will preview LSU versus the Doors next.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
All right, speaking of those LSU Tigers, welcome back. It's a Thursday, April 4th. SEC doing their Thursday, Friday, Saturday stint for LSU for the second week in a row. And Jay Johnson trying to figure out how to get off this schneid where they've lost their last five games in Southeastern Conference play. And of course, the schedule never gets easier as seventh ranked Vanderbilt comes into town. He is the voice of Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field. He is the longtime sports information director in charge of baseball and our near and dear friend, Bill Franquez, kind enough to join us. Bill, woo, let's go, baby. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How's everything over there?
Everything's great, man. Everything's great. No great problems. Yeah. All right. So just do me a favor now. You're part of this team. So no cell phone. Once you pull up to the parking lot, you got to turn that baby off.
You know, it's funny. yesterday we had our weekly media availability with Jay Johnson in the Champions Club. And, you know, of course he was asked about the cell phone ban for the players, and then when he went on to talk about other about the series, and as he's asking a question, I found myself reaching for my phone and started looking at it. I thought, oh, maybe I better put it away. So I put it away real quickly. So trying to abide by Jay's rules, even though I'm much older than his ball players.
Normally, when you put out your release prior to a series, you have starting pitchers for all three games out there. Now, these are two veteran Wiley coaches. They're not tipping their hat, are they?
Well, now, since that was released, they have in fact revealed who's going to pitch. So we know two of the three for LSU. We do know tonight, Jordy, that he's going to go with Luke Holman, and so Luke will be pitching for the first time on one shorter day of rest. He'll be pitching on 6 days instead of 7 days of rest. The Holman will start tonight for the Tigers, and then Gage Jump will do the same thing. He'll move a day up in the rotation. He'll pitch on Friday night. And then Saturday, we don't know yet who's going to pitch for the Tigers. That's definitely a TBA slot right now. So, and then Vanderbilt's going to counter with a right-hander, Grayson Carter, who is not one of their high-end starters. But then you get in the next two guys, Bryce Cunningham, a right-hander, and Carter Holton, a lefty, on Friday and Saturday. Those guys are top-shelf SEC pitchers. So that looks like the matchups right now. Tonight, we'll see Luke Holman for LSU, Grayson Carter, a junior right-hander, going for Vandy.
The good thing about baseball is you don't have time to dwell on what happened because you got to go play again. And, look, stranger things happen. You've been around this organization, this club, through years and years and years with national championships, some downtimes. But you know, things like this happen sometimes. But when you lose to Southern at home, it really causes people to open their eyes and go, okay, what's happening? And apparently that got to Jay Johnson a little bit as well. I heard they had a staff meeting till like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the next day they have a uncalled, very unusual inter-squad scrimmage. What's the tell me the latest.
Yeah, Jay feels like that he needs to do some things to get the players and the staff's attention. And of course, not having cell phones at the field is one of those measures, of course. Inter-squad scrimmage on Tuesday, another one of those measures. And Jay said yesterday during the media session that up to this point, the players seem to have responded very well to his demands. I mean, he's already a very demanding coach, but perhaps he felt like his demands weren't being responded to in the proper way. So now he's made some adjustments, and we hope that it's going to benefit the team over the course of these next several weeks because, as we know, they put themselves in a hole. Five straight SEC losses. You're 2-7 after 3 weeks. The Tigers have a lot of work to do, and it's not getting any easier. This weekend certainly won't be. Next weekend at Tennessee certainly will not be. So yeah, I think if the, you know, Jay has said all along before this week that these players care a great deal. They love LSU. There's no lack of effort, no lack of desire to be better. If all that's true, then I think they'll adapt to these adjustments and do what it takes to improve. And hopefully, the improvement and the development will translate into positive results in the win column.
21 SEC games left to go. You're 2-7. I did my math. That means you got to go 13-8 in the last 21 just to get to 500.
Yes. Jordy, you and I think alike. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah, and that's with the schedule. I know it lightens up a little bit, but you can't look when you go 8-54 with runners in scoring position in your last seven contests, and you got a 6.79 ERA on the mound. You commit errors left and right, one on a Friday night in the 10th inning that allowed the game-winning run to reach base. Those are recipes for disaster. But just like anything, maybe somebody's got a possum in a cage and they're going to sneak it out to the outfield and turn that baby loose. Something's got to happen.
There we go. I think you're right, Jordy. And Jay's, if anyone can work out of this issue, it's definitely Jay Johnson. As we know, he's so dedicated to the game of baseball and so dedicated to his profession. Just that example of being in the staff meeting till 2:12 in the morning on Tuesday morning is a good example. And no one's going to outwork him. We know that. And he has a great staff. His pitching coach, Nate Yeske, has been with three different teams to the College World Series, including winning a national championship at Oregon State. The rest of his staff are all excellent recruiters and excellent teachers. So I feel confident that the Tigers are going to find the right combination of players, and they're going to get themselves back into contention for at least a regional host.
That lineup card might look a little bit different tonight, but the quote that stood out to me from Jay Johnson yesterday says, "Sometimes you wonder if LSU's ever had a dark moment in baseball. I have, and so I feel like I'm actually very well prepared to help our team through this difficult time." So we shall see how that equates. But he talked about Vanderbilt. Look, this is a program that, year in, year out, is one of those that when you talk about the best teams in college baseball over the course of time, Vanderbilt is certainly one of them. He talked about them offensively, playing a different brand of baseball offensively than most other teams do. He said, "Boy, they got a lot of speed." What have you seen from Vanderbilt?
Yeah, you know, Jordy, when we were in Houston for the Astros Collegiate Classic, Vanderbilt was there also participating in the event. We didn't play Vanderbilt in that event, but I was able to watch a couple of their games. And a game that stands out to me was when on day three of the tournament, when we played Texas State, Vanderbilt played Texas prior to our game. So I got there maybe about the third or fourth inning. By the time I got there, Texas had built an 11-3 lead. And I'm thinking, wow, man, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Vanderbilt have this kind of deficit. And they came roaring back. They were a very impressive combination of both speed and power. Tim Corbin has been there since 2003. He's won two national championships. I mean, he recruits at a very high level. They've been most often known for their incredible pitching. And this team appears to have that. But this team also appears to be extremely athletic as far as the position players. They're going to steal a lot of bases. They're going to do a lot of hit and run. They're going to, like Jay says, they play a unique a style that is unique to the SEC. Now, they do have some power. They don't rely on the power like a Georgia or a Tennessee does. They're going to come at you with a lot of different types of weapons. So I think LSU is going to have to just be extremely alert and be ready to perform at a high level to really contain some of the things they like to do.
Well, that's why I thought there was no – I mean, I thought there was no question or doubt that Holman would get the ball tonight. You can't fall behind in a series again and have to try to win two in a row. You got to put your stud out there. He leads the SEC in ERA with a 1.38 mark. He's number two in strikeouts with 61. He's fourth in the SEC in opponent batting average, only a 173. I want to know what the other three guys are doing and what their opponent batting average is. If he's only giving up .173, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's been you know, excellent, as we know. Didn't have the greatest outing last week against Arkansas. Control was an issue really for the first time because he had five walks in that outing against Arkansas. But as we know, 2 weeks ago in his home start against Florida, man, he was just exceptional with a career high of 13 strikeouts. So we're hoping for that type of performance here this evening.
All right. So first pitch gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight. You can of course listen to it here on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. Friday, it's a 7 p.m. start, and getaway day Saturday, a 2 o'clocker at the box. So, number 18 versus number 7, depending upon what poll you follow. So we'll see, man. 20-10 overall, 2-7 in the SEC. This is critical. I know they're all important, but man, tonight is especially important. So Bill, enjoy. And I can't wait to see what this lineup looks like and how the Tigers respond. And I'm curious to see how the fan base responds as well.
Yeah.
What this team needs, the fans
absolutely.
To be up and up and about and into it early, not waiting for LSU to give them something to cheer about, but cheering them on to make something good happen.
Yeah, you're right, Jordan. We played at Mississippi State and Arkansas, two of the best home venues in the country. Those fans make a difference. They really do. And so I think it does help when our fans are energized and behind the team. And I think that basically we need a home field advantage. Absolutely.
All right, Bill. Thank you so much for taking some time out on a busy day. We'll be listening. We'll be watching. And good luck to the Tigers.
All right, man. Thank you so much, Jordy.
You're the best. Bill Frank is kind enough to join us again. All games right here on ESPN 103.7, Lafayette 104.1 in Lake Charles. So very important. Boy, they better get this one tonight or just saying. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. LSU football back on the Ponderosa. What's Haley Van Lith going to do? Gymnastics going for a national championship. They begin their NCAA tournament quest. All these and much more with Matthew Bruni next.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, we're back 35 minutes after the hour. We welcome in our good friend from BengalTigerOn3.com, Matthew Bruni, who covers all things LSU. Matthew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day outside, and
isn't it?
Got done with the podcast, and we're doing great.
All right, so Angel Reese says, I'm going to the WNBA. What's going on with Haley Van Lith?
Yeah, that's what we're all waiting for right now. I kind of assumed that she was going to go to the WNBA or at least try her hand there and then go pro wherever she can go pro. But I think as more time goes by, I feel like she would have announced if she was staying as well. So I'm now operating under the assumption that she's going to enter the transfer portal. We'll see if and when that happens, but I just can't see her coming back for another season. After kind of just the way, and it wasn't anything bad, you know, how it ended this year or anything, but I think ultimately for her, she just has to regain her confidence, get her stock back up, and just kind of probably get a change of scenery.
I don't know where she would play for LSU. You got last tier Poa coming back at the point, Michaela Williams, Flauge Johnson, and you get this freshman coming in from LCA, the player of the year in the state, Jada Richard. I don't think there's a spot for Haley Van Lith.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah, I agree. And ultimately, we saw she worked really hard the entire year trying to get more comfortable with the point guard position. I just don't think that's where she's at her best, and I think she knows that. I think everybody knows that, and it'll be interesting to see where, if she does enter the portal, where she would go next. And, you know, she's from Washington, so who knows, maybe she goes to the West Coast. But I think she just has to get somewhere where she can get up her shots and get comfortable again. But for LSU, I think they're, if that does happen, they'll be comfortable, you know, moving on and looking in the portal to get a point guard.
No, of course. I just saw where Tennessee got rid of their coach. They got any good, they usually have some good players at Tennessee. Maybe they're looking to hit the portal. Maybe they say, hey, let me come down and play at LSU.
Yeah, LSU in general is going to be really aggressive in the portal, as we know. They've already gotten one commit from Arkansas, 6'5" girl. That's really skilled, a former number 5 overall player in the country. And they're hosting a girl, a Whitehorn from Syracuse, from Clemson, who is a good-sized wing that they'll be able to add as a depth piece, I think as a rotation piece if they're able to get her. So they're hosting her on a visit later this month. So, yeah, they're definitely going to try to be deeper than they were this year. That's a huge point of emphasis for Kim Mulkey and her staff this offseason.
Deeper and quicker. They got to get quicker out there. Okay, so we'll wait to see what Haley Van Lith does. I agree with you. I think she's going to hit the portal and go somewhere else, and good luck to her. I was a little bit surprised with Angel Reese, just to be honest with you. I know they get tired of going to school. I know they just want to get out and get on their own. I can understand that. I'm not faulting her. But, boy, I'm going to tell you what, she's in for an awakening when she gets to that league with all the size that they have and her lack thereof of an outside game. It's going to be a tough road for her, in my opinion.
Yeah, we all know how talented the WNBA is and how high the standard is to play basketball in that league. I mean, Alexis Morris wasn't able to stick in there after winning a championship. You know, there's times where first-round picks in the WNBA don't even stick for very long. So I expect Angel to be selected in the first round. Probably, I think most mocks have around 7 or 8 or so. I think I agree that she'll have to improve as a shooter, but ultimately the defense, the rebounding, the passing, she has to be elite in those areas.
Yes.
to overcome.
Yes.
The lack of shooting. And, you know, we've seen in the NBA where Draymond Greens and so on and so forth can have their roles. But in today's day and age in the WNBA and the NBA, you know, shooting is just so important and spacing is so crucial. I think Angel will continue to work on that.
Problem is there's so fewer teams in the WNBA and there's only 11 players on a roster, so it's really tough to make it, but we'll see. All right, let's switch gears to football. I don't know if you went and watched today or not, but apparently the 20-minute open portion of LSU's football practice this morning was up and about. Were you able to go witness?
I was not, but Shay was there, and I was able to read their reports around there and look on Twitter and everything, watch videos. So I've gotten plenty good a hold of what is going on over there.
Well, let's talk about this early enrollee, P.J. Woodland, who seems to be turning heads as a cornerback.
Yeah, he's going to be really interesting. He's someone I was really high on as a recruit. He was a modest 3-star guy, not a top 300 guy. I think he was the number 17 player in Mississippi, which, you know, Mississippi's not a bad state of football or anything, but he wasn't this highly rated guy who we knew was going to come in and make plays immediately. But I think when we watched his tape out of high school, you could just tell how competitive he was and how fiery he was and how much of a playmaker he was in all three phases of the ball, because he returned punts, he was a receiver. Great athlete. only 5'11", but just always making plays in high school, and was the 7A Mississippi Defensive Player of the Year last year. So we knew he had potential. I had him as, you know, a top 11 player in the class, and he's come in and really wowed Blake Baker and this staff in terms of his competitiveness and his ability to pick up things really quickly. So, you know, I don't think he's, even though he got some run, he's getting run with the one in spring ball. I'm not sure he'll, you know, start the year as their starting corner, but regardless, he'll be in that rotation, I think. Yeah. And it's always good to have guys break out like that.
Absolutely. Baker did say, I think the corners have probably grown more than any other group. Those corners have gotten much, much better as a unit. And I love the fact that they're going to be playing more man coverage than they did last year. Those soft zones were like driving me crazy. So play some man-to-man. Electric talent speak for itself.
Yep, exactly. That's how a lot of LSU fans feel right now. I mean, just it is going to be based on personnel, and it's going to be based on, you know, different coverages and stuff. But he's not – Blake Baker's not going to be afraid to put them in situations where they're going to have to, you know, kind of do or die. Like, ultimately, LSU's defense last year played it safe in a lot of ways, played it very conservative, and was trying not to give up the huge, the big play, and ultimately just wasn't good enough to stop anybody. This year, I think, with Harold Perkins, with – guys like Deshaun Womack, Braden Swenson, you know, Whit Weeks, Major Burns in that star position, I think they're going to be a lot more aggressive and try to help out the corners and try to help them in terms of not having to cover for so long and maybe create chaos. I think that's what Blake Baker, his catchphrase is, and he's done that the last 2 years at Missouri.
So it's good to hear the secondary's getting better. We got to work on that defensive line, and Kimo Makanioli, converted offensive lineman, from what I've read, was a first-team defensive tackle today, along with redshirt senior Jacobian Guillory. I don't know how I feel about that there, Matthew. What do you think?
I mean, we should feel the way that we felt the past, 4 months since Mason Smith, or I guess 3 months at this point, since Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson and Mekhi Wingo are all head to the draft. And, you know, they were able to get Dominic McKinley, but he's not going to be in purple and gold until the fall or the summer. So right now they're just trying to figure out that nose tackle position, or that, you know, more interior defensive tackle spot, because Jacobian Guillory will be a starter. The question is it going to be Jalen Lee? Is it going to be Kimo Makanioli? Is Dominic McKinley going to somehow come in and be able to start immediately? Or are they going to go to the portal? And they already got the one guy from Wisconsin who can play. There's just so many question marks at that defensive tackle spot that it is a rotating door, and they're just trying to see who can play right now.
Is that true that you were waiting in line at the LSU bookstore to get in at midnight to see this Travis Scott and his LSU limited run clothing line, and then went to Fred's and performed a concert like at 1:30 in the morning? Was that you? Is that true? Was that you, Matthew?
No, that was not me. That was not me. Maybe in my younger days, you know, I'm 26 now. I just turned 26 a couple weeks ago, so, you know, I can't be out there running around like I used to.
I heard Angel Reese has had quite the run since the tournament ended. She was courtside for the Pels game last night, and then she was at the LSU bookstore at midnight. Then at Fred's after that, Jaden Daniels there as well, and they're all getting that free swag from the Cactus Jack collaboration. How about that?
Yeah, Travis Scott. I didn't know you were privy to Travis Scott and what who he is.
Dude, come on now. I got kids. I got girl. I know all this stuff. I'm kind of, I stay up with the times, baby. I may be up in age, but I don't act it. Don't feel it. I'm good. Yes, indeed. I gotta get your thoughts. You're a basketball guy. The women's Final Four gets underway tomorrow. Is anything stopping Caitlin Clark from getting to the national championship game, or is it Paige Buckets going to get in her way? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch that. I think Paige Beckers has been kind of underrated since, obviously, she got hurt last year, but I mean, as a freshman, she was what Juju Watkins is right now. She was a phenom. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if UConn upset them and gave them problems. But that's going to be a lot of fun watching Paige Beckers versus Caitlin Clark. And then on the other side, obviously South Carolina against a really good NC State team that put it on Texas, the one seed in that region. I think NC State could give South Carolina some problems with their pace and their guards. So
everybody's rubber stamping South Carolina in the championship game. And I'm just telling you, that pressure builds and builds and builds. And NC State's not too shabby on that one. What do you think about the so who you picking? You picking UConn or Iowa?
Who? It feels like Iowa's year. Yeah. As much as I love Paige Beckers, man, she can really play. But I'll stick with Iowa. I think Caitlin's kind of got it going now. I think getting over this was their the LSU game was kind of their big hurdle to clear. And now I think they're going to be a lot more comfortable in these coming games here.
Here's the prediction I want. Are either of those, the remaining three games in the women's bracket, are any of them going to rival the over 12 million that watched LSU-Iowa play?
Oh, man. No. None of them
no
will.
Way.
I think, was it the USC-UConn game after LSU got 6 million on average? I think that's a really, really – that's a great number, first of all. And then if any of these, final four games can get 7 or 8 million, I think that'd be awesome for the sport.
There you go. All right. On the men's side, the only thing that could stop UConn looks like an airplane. I don't know if anybody can stop them.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, we know Alabama, they're going to shoot a billion threes and see how many of them go in. So maybe they get hot. But UConn is really, really strong. And it might be UConn versus Purdue. It might be Klingon versus
Battle of the Behemoths.
Really interesting matchup there.
The Battle of the Behemoths, Edie and Klingon. I mean, both 174, 1'7". I just think UConn has top to bottom so much better. And I love Danny Hurley. I love him. Anyway, all right, Matthew Bruni. Any thoughts on LSU baseball, Vanderbilt? Boy, they better get this win tonight, there's going to be some rumbling going on.
Jeez. I don't have thoughts. I just hope they win the game, man. That's been a rough past couple weeks, really past few weeks. But, yeah, it's watching that Jay Johnson, the past two Jay Johnson press conferences have been rough.
Yes. Boy, I can see them gripping that bat. Boy, that pressure. Woo! We shall see what happens. Matthew, you're the best. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the ball games. And if at all possible, we'll talk to you again next week.
Yes, thanks for having me, Jordy. Anytime.
You're the best. All right, Matthew Bruni, BengalTigerOn3.com. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour number one. We'll revisit our poll question of the day, set the stage for hour number two. It's all coming your way after this brief timeout.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Hi, we welcome you back. James Mesh, you just sent me a text, and I greatly appreciate it. Will Wade's got himself a commitment.
Yes, Joe Charles, former Louisiana Raging Cajun. He is transferring, going from Lafayette to now going to Lake Charles to play for Will Wade's squad with the Cowboys.
Oh, that only heightens that rivalry a little bit more, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I know that. I know when we had seen it, it was like, oh, okay, this one's this one's gonna make things a little bit spicier.
I would imagine that McNeese has to. I can't remember the schedule from years past, but I know the Cajuns played in Lake Charles this past basketball season. I hope McNeese returns the favor and comes to Lafayette to play next season. That would be fun.
Yeah, I believe the Cajuns had to host a couple in a row because of the hurricanes, so they weren't able to host. So McNeese returned the favor saying, we'll do a couple in a row. So I believe we'll be back to normal schedule where McNeese will have to come to Lafayette to the Cajun Dome next season.
Nice, nice. I can promise you Matt McMahon and LSU are not scheduling Will Wade and McNeese anytime soon. That ain't happening. Let's do our poll question of the day. Let's update, please.
Absolutely. And the poll question of the day was, will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament? We've gotten a little bit of a shift in the votes here, but still a vast majority of you have said no at 68%. That means 32% have said yes. We did get a couple of comments, too. Hard it said, last five games have been brutal. By far the toughest stretch all season. I think they can handle the last six and get into the sixth seed, especially if they get key guys back like B.I. and Jose Alvarado. Still not a fan of Willie Green sitting Jordan Hawkins, Matt Ryan, and even Jonas Valanciunas when they hit walls in the offense, though.
I'm with that tweet or that text. I don't get it sometimes. The good news for the Pels, get away from home. Right now they're 21-17 inside the Smoothie King Center. They're 24-14 away from home. So let's get them going. But the problem is that Phoenix has won two in a row. Sacramento's two in a row. The Lakers have won three in a row. The Golden State Warriors have won five in a row. The Pels have lost three straight. So they are limping to the finish line. Tell you what, Brandon Ingram, they need him. They need a guy that can take you off the dribble and get anywhere on the court that he wants to and can just basically shoot over and get a good look at the basket over anybody. They don't have that now. And look, Zion's been terrific last night. Everybody held their breath, thought he got hurt, and he cut his hand on the rim during the dunk. But again, how many times have you heard me say this, James? Can you please, please get a 10 to 15 foot jump shot? I'm talking about inside the lane to the free throw line. Can you get a jump shot, please? He'd be so much better. So we'll see. Keep voting. And we'll get the final results at the end of hour number two, which is going to begin here forsooth. Todd Walker will join us. We'll talk more about the pressure that is LSU baseball, the expectations. How does this team handle this with the microscope on them? Everybody's watching going, when are you going to flip this script and get going? Wearing the mantle of reigning national champions and all that. It's hard to replace Cruz and Skeens and Morgan and some of those guys. But anyway, we'll talk with Todd Walker about that. And Frank Schwab, who's winning the offseason in the NFL? And who would he take at number one? Would he take Caleb Williams? Would he take Jaden Daniels? Would he take Drake May? Would he take J.J. McCarthy? We'll ask the Schwab all that and more. Hour number two straight ahead, the Jordy Helfrich Show, ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. ESPN 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the Tigers and the Houston Astros.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go as the final four for the women and the men get ready to roll Friday and Saturday. And we've got a huge, huge baseball series at the box as Vanderbilt comes to town for game one today. James Mesh back in the master control suite inside the EVCO Development Studios producing this two-hour program of excellence. It's on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette Head West, ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles. Thrilled to be there, streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. As I said, the LSU Tigers struggling of late, to say the very, very least, struggling of late, 2-7 in SEC play, trying to get their act together today against the Vanderbilt Commodores. One of the all-time greatest players in LSU baseball history. Had a great Major League Baseball career, now doing analyst work for the SEC Network, amongst other things. It's a privilege and an honor to welcome in my buddy, Todd Walker, to the program. Todd, thanks for the time, man. How How are things up there in North Louisiana, my friend?
Well, they're great in North Louisiana, Jordy, but I'm actually in Delray Beach, believe it or not, at a pickleball tournament.
So the tennis world is over. Now you pickleballing it, huh? I mean, dude, you never stop.
Getting on the road and running like I used to, I got to chase a ball around. So the only way I'm going to stay in shape is to chase a ball. So it was tennis, and now it's pickleball.
I've never played it. I want to play it. How similar and dissimilar is it?
Well, it's similar in the running, especially singles, but it's pickleball is like running. You would be well aware of this being a former basketball player. It's like doing shuttle runs for like 10 minutes straight. I mean, you're bending over, the ball doesn't really bounce. And so you're getting a lot of cardio and sit-ups at the same time. And then you do enough of that in one day, and man, it'll wear you out. So I love it for that reason, because it preoccupies my mind with what's going on, but I get a workout. And again, as we get older, you got to find ways to trick your mind. So that's what I'm doing.
Love it. I love it. All right. How are we going to trick LSU baseball players' minds to get off the schneid that they're doing? I mean, there is the pressure of coming in as a reigning national champion. There's the pressure within the program itself to live up to the standard that you guys set and has always been the case with LSU baseball. And now at 2-7 in the league with the powerhouse that always is Vanderbilt coming to town, there's some pressure on these kids.
Well, 5 of the last 6 national championships have been won by the SEC. But the interesting thing about that, it's by 5 different schools. So you don't dominate the SEC year in and year out. LSU just won the national championship on a good run late. You know, they didn't have a great season, but they had a good run late. And now you're seeing how tough this conference is. LSU had 2 road series out of the 3. So the schedule hasn't done them any favors. Go to Mississippi State and go to Arkansas. Arkansas is the number 1 team in the country. And then they had a home series against Florida. I mean, and now they got Vanderbilt at home. Then they go to Tennessee. And playing Missouri at Missouri is much different than playing Missouri at home. So the schedule has not done them any favors. That being said, there's a lot of issues. And, you know, like last year, and it's a long season and it's a marathon, and you just try to work it out along the way.
They've got, I've said this and said this many, many times, they're 2-7 in conference play. They got 21 games left in the regular season in the SEC. They got to go 13-8 just to get to 500. That's not easy.
Yeah, and ultimately, Jordy, you want to get to the field of 64, right? How do you do that? First goal is make the SEC tournament. And we all know Mississippi State and Ole Miss, having won the last 2 national championships, didn't make the SEC tournament last year, which is unheard of. But if you don't make the tournament, your season's over right there. But 14-16 in the league is what Ole Miss was back when they won the national championship. But remember, they were 6-14 at one time, and they turned it around within the league, 14-16, and they got into the field of 64. So you need to have that 14 win mark within the conference, I think. 13, and you're really stretching it, but it's still possible. 12, and you're probably out. So they need it. The 13 is probably the magic number to get in. And, of course, they want LSU into the postseason because of the money they bring and the following and the excitement and everything. So it is a committee that picks those guys. So it's a human element involved. So LSU has that advantage. But they got to get to 13 wins. They got 2 right now, and just like we talked about with the schedule, man, oh, man, it's tough. Luke Holman's legit. Gage Jump, I think, is going to pitch better. They don't have a 3, like last year. Don't have a 3. And so you got to figure that stuff out.
And you got to be able to hit the ball, and you got to be able to feel the ball. Now, it's hard to replace a Skeens and a Cruz and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, in basketball, it's, you know, you got the ball in your hand and you control it and you shoot it and it goes in and you feel good about yourself. In baseball, you got somebody out there throwing the ball upwards of 95 to 100 miles an hour at you with all kind of action and spin on it. So how do you get out of a slump and get things going in the right direction?
I think what's their greatest asset is also their greatest detriment, and that is they got so much talent, Jordy. I mean, they got so many good hitters on that lineup. The detriment part of it is if I go 0-4, I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm thinking, well, there's so much talent here. Yeah. If I don't get a hit right now, I'm going to get benched. And that's kind of what's happening, you know. But if you're Jay Johnson, what's your choice? I mean, you got to try to find lightning in a bottle. You got to keep throwing guys out there, hope they get hot, and then you roll that guy out. Because they really only have, you know, the three guys you pin in the lineup, you know, Travinsky, you know, the first baseman, Jones, and maybe Milam, you know, and of course Tommy White.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you got to find somebody that can get it done. And here's the stat I pulled up. So in the seven losses, they lost seven games in the conference. In all seven losses after the fourth inning, they were in the game. After four, they were tied in four of those games. They were down by one in two of them, and they were down by three to nothing in the Mississippi State game. They ended up getting 10-run ruled. So what it speaks to is bullpen and quality at-bats after you've had an at-bat or two in a game. I always thought if I could take six, seven, eight pitches in my first at-bat, it set me up for the rest of the game, whether I got a hit or not. But you go up your first at-bat, and let's say you get a hit, but you saw one pitch. You're still not really set up with your tempo and your timing for the rest of the game, and maybe a little bit of that's going on. But they're having a hard time after the fourth inning closing these games out. So they've lost all seven of those. But they've been in it, you know, early. They just can't close them late.
So stick around a little bit. Watch some pitches. Foul some pitches off. Get some more so you get a good rhythm and a good tempo and go from there. But, you know, basketball, you go 3-for-10, and you're sitting on the bench. Baseball, you go 3-for-10. You got a chance to be in the Hall of Fame. So it takes a whole different mindset. How did you everybody, even the greatest of the greatest of the greats, at one point in time goes through a little bit of a slump. When you faced that, how did you handle that, and how did you break through that? Because you were still the greatest hitter I ever saw at LSU.
Well, thanks, Jordy. And look, the reason I was able to do that is because I got three hits on opening night my freshman year, and I never had to look back. And Skip Bertman put me in the lineup every day. So if I had a little mini slump, I remember going 0-for-6 one time at UNO, I didn't have to think I was about to get benched or that somebody else was behind me going to take my spot. And so I was able to work it out. Because the more bats you get strung together, the better, you know, that's as good of a hitter as you can be, right? Because, again, back to the tempo and the timing stuff with all that. But, again, and Jay's not doing it wrong. I mean, everything's he's doing exactly what he should be doing, and that is I got to find somebody that can play. You know, when the lights turn on in the conference, it's much different than the midweek games and the pre-conference schedule, right? So, you know, these freshmen, they got a ton of freshmen and a lot of talent, by the way. I mean, I got the number one player out of Kansas, number two player out of Arizona, number one player out of California, number one player out of New Mexico. It's Milam. So their recruiting class is ridiculous, but they're freshmen. And so you stick them in the best conference in the country, you don't know how they're going to react. And so he's trying to find that out right now.
I've always said Dale Brown, my coach, his best teams were when he had about seven players. And just to your point, nobody was looking over their shoulders. And you played through mistakes and you got confidence and you go from there. Is that what Jay needs to do? He needs to go, okay, look, you're my guys. I've seen enough. I know who can. I know who can't. Go out there and play. I'm not going to pull you. Go play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really looked at it, but I think Ethan Frye had a big game against Florida, and so he thought, okay, there's the guy. And then the next 2 days, he didn't do anything. So, you don't have the timing. Like in Major League Baseball, you get 500 at-bats. And so you can roll guys out to go over 30 and just trust that they've got the ability to bust out of it. But in college baseball, you can't go over you can't sit on a guy for over 30. The three guys I mentioned, Travinsky, Jones, and White, you're going to roll them out no matter what. They're going to play every day, whether they go over 30 or not. The rest of the guys, again, like I said, Jay started out by putting a lot of guys in the lineup and seeing who could play and who couldn't. They did all the pre-conference stuff that way, and that was the right way to do it. And now you're still trying to find it. But I think to your point, and look, I'm just speaking personally as a player, not as a coach.
Right.
As a player, I know I felt my best when I knew I was in there every day and I was playing one way or the other. And you're right. There are going to be slumps no matter how good of a hitter you are, and you just work through them. But he's still trying to find, you know, that special player, and they will. They're going to turn it around. The schedule's tough, but they'll find it. They've got really a lot of talent on that roster.
Well, here's over the last seven contests, they're 8-for-54 with runners in scoring position. Okay. A 6.79 ERA on the mound, and they're committing errors left and right. I mean, you can't win. I don't care. You can't beat Southern if you do that. No offense to our friends here in North Baton Rouge, but you can't beat Southern when you do play baseball like that.
They've given up the most walks outside the conference as a whole, the entire schedule, and they've given up the most walks within the conference and just the 9-game sample size. You start giving free passes away and you lose. So to your point, there's different ways of getting beat, but for me, my eyes always go for the walks. How many free passes am I giving up? Which also means, Jordy, by the way, if you're walking guys, that's one thing, but what that also means is for the other hitters that don't walk, you're so erratic that you're putting them in positive counts, and so they get more fastballs, and so you get hit around more. You know, that kind of, it all goes hand in hand. And I think that's the main concern they should have right now is giving away too many free passes.
Well, there's a new law now. We can't do prop bets on players, thank goodness, starting this college football season. But I'd like to make a prop bet on you at this Delray, Florida pickleball tournament. I'm betting on you because you're a winner. Always have been.
Hey, and it's a battle of attrition, man. I mean, you play the entire tournament in one day. So you're playing singles. If you win, you play again. You win. You can play six matches in one day of singles. And, man, it's like running a marathon sprint. And so I'm hoping I can last. But that's tomorrow. I'm here watching today.
You're watching today, playing tomorrow. Good luck. Have fun. Todd, it's always a privilege to have you on. One of my all-time favorites. Do a tremendous job in television. So thank you. We'll do it again down the road, my friend. I appreciate it.
Well, again, everybody, you know, needs to, I've learned not to panic on records, especially early in the season, because of what happened with Mississippi State in 21 and what happened with Ole Miss in 22. And then right in front of our eyes, LSU did the same thing. They weren't great last year, and all of a sudden they roll it out. They got Nate Yeske as a pitching coach, and they got Jay Johnson. That's all you need to know. They'll figure it out.
See, Todd, you brought people back off the cliff. You're good. You're doing a public service for all these baseball fans. Thank you, man.
All right, Jory. Thank you.
You take care. Todd Walker bringing some common sense to the matter. A lot of baseball to be played. These guys have been there and done it before. We'll see if they can do it again starting tonight, 6 p.m. right here, ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. We'll go over some news and notes before we get to the Schwab and all the NFL goings-ons when we continue after this.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We are back. Hope you're having a spectacular day on this Thursday, April the 4th. So a big baseball game tonight for LSU. They'll continue Friday and Saturday. Huge game for the Pelicans on Friday as they wrap up this six-game homestand with Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs, who are by no means a cinch win anymore, because he makes a difference. There's no question. The Western Conference is absurd. Minnesota is at 57-25, same record as the Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're all 57-25. The Clippers are in fourth at 51-31. So their strength of schedule is pretty difficult. They've got Denver, Utah, Cleveland. They're at Phoenix, home against Phoenix, Utah, and Houston. So we'll see what happens there. That's been 30. They've got the easiest schedule left in the West. Atlanta, Golden State, Houston, at Charlotte, at Miami, Detroit, and at Oklahoma City. So you got to like their chances, and they have been terrific down this stretch run to get to where they are right now. Boy, Luka is unguardable. He is unguardable. Phoenix is in the sixth spot. They've got Minnesota, a huge matchup at home against the Pelicans. Then they take on the Clippers. Then they go on the road, and they got a tough one now. They're at the Clippers, at Sacramento, and at Minnesota. That is the hardest remaining schedule left in the West. Now, according to NBA analytics and everything, they believe the New Orleans Pelicans are going to finish very, very strong. Pels are 45-31. They are projected to get to 50 wins, which means they'd have to win five of their remaining six, starting with San Antonio on Friday at Phoenix. Thank God they're playing at Phoenix and not New Orleans, because Devin Booker doesn't miss when he's inside the Smoothie King Center. A winnable game at Portland. Just as Orlando seems to have New Orleans' number, New Orleans seems to have Sacramento's number. They'll play them in Sactown. At Golden State, who knows if they're going to play any of their players by that time, because they can't improve upward. They can't falter downward. There's too much of a gap between them and the Lakers to try and get to ninth. And there's too far down are the Rockets to fall out of the playoffs at all. So maybe they'll rest them. And then the Pels finish things off on a Sunday afternoon against the Lakers. It may come down to that. Their highest possible finish is fourth. And they could certainly be in the play-in factor if they don't finish strong. They do own the tiebreakers against the Clippers and the Kings. So right behind New Orleans is Sacramento. They've got, boy, we got to pull. Listen to these next four. At the New York Knicks. Tough to win in Madison Square Garden. At Boston. At Brooklyn, that's a win. At Oklahoma City, that'll be tough. Then they're at home against the Pelicans, Phoenix, and Portland. They've got the second hardest schedule in the West. So there you go. It's coming down to the wire. And Pels without Brandon Ingram become very, very – it messes with their rotation. And you could see that Orlando took Trey Murphy out of the game last night. They just wouldn't play off of him. They said, Zion, we're gonna pad the middle. We're going to leave some other guys open. We're not going to guard Valanciunas. We're not going to guard Larry Nance Jr., but we're not letting you go. We're not helping out. We're going to take you out of the game because your threes are too good. And they did that, and the Pels struggled offensively. They lack that spark from Jose Alvarado off the bench. You know, he in games like that, he's the one that gets the crowd into it. He'll come up with a steal. He'll knock down a three-pointer, things like that. That crowd was sitting on the edge of their seats trying to get into it, but the Pels gave them nothing to get into it with. So six games remaining. They've lost three in a row. Just 10 days ago, they were in fourth, looking like they were going to host a first-round playoff matchup. And now they're trying their very, very best just to get to back to number six. How the pendulum turns and turns quickly. So you got a scoreboard watch, and you got to figure out what these other teams are going to be doing. I kind of looked at the women's Final Four to see how the starters would stack up, which teams have the best lineups. Caitlin Clark's the best player in the tournament from Iowa. Paige Buchers is the next best player from UConn. I mean, she's been a quiet 28.9 rebound, 5 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks average during tournament play. She's really, really good. Those are very similar players in size, in stature, and the way they play. Buchers is not the 3-point phenom that Clark is, and she plays well within a system that Gino Auriemma brings out. Caitlin Clark just has the green light, and she is so good. 32 points, 10 assists, the most famous college athlete in America. I'm talking all of them. I'm talking more famous than Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, more famous than anybody on the men's side of college, more famous than Zach Edey by far. So anyway, Paige Buchers, Caitlin Clark, that's a matchup. Isaiah James of NC State, averaging 24 points, had 29 and 27 in her last two games. She makes NC State very formidable. The next best player out there is Aaliyah Edwards of UConn. She's headed to the WNBA, averaging 17 points, 9 rebounds. The Huskies have lost 6 players to injury, but the players they've got out there, they got the best lineup on the floor, but the best team is South Carolina. They're so well balanced. Golly, Raven Johnson's been terrific. Just 3 turnovers in 4 games. Then you go to Camila Cardoso, the 6'7 Brazilian, just as a difference maker, just by her size. Yeah, she gets you 15 points a game, but on defense, she goes crazy. She's number 6 in my ranking. Number 7, the glue. Just ask LSU how good Kate Martin is. Yeah, 15 points a game, 10 rebounds a game. Boy, she hurt LSU. Sania Rivers from NC State. She is the catalyst for the Wolfpack. She's played all 40 minutes in three straight games. She's really good. Another Iowa player. Ask LSU about Sydney Affolter. Didn't even start. Wasn't a starter a month ago. Now, 15 points against Colorado, 16 against LSU. What did Kim Mulkey say? Caitlin Clark's going to get hers. You just got to hold the other ones down. Well, they didn't hold down Kate Martin, and they didn't hold down Sydney Affolter. That's why Iowa survived in advance, and that's why LSU's at home. Rounding out the top 10 in my book, Tahina Papoa. Powell, of South Carolina. Lethal from behind the arc. Lethal. So it's going to be interesting. I don't think there's a sure thing in either one of these games. Not like the men. I think it's going to be Purdue versus UConn in the men's final. It wouldn't surprise me on any way, shape, or form if who would get to the finals. They're all good. They all have certain things that they do that make it hard to stop around. Can Caitlin Clark continue to play at the level that she is? She has one awkward shooting night. Just one. That could be it. But so far, so good. So far, so good. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll talk football. We'll talk NFL football with the Schwab. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports, next.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, we are back at 35 minutes after the hour. It's been a while, but have to give a break after the Super Bowl. But the draft is coming up and things are happening as always in the NFL, much to our delight. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, the Schwab. How are you, Frank? How's everything?
Good, Jordy. How are you? How's it going?
It's good, man. The draft is coming up and I don't know what's going on here, but all I can say is we got a Dallas mayor who must be cuckoo trying to get the Chiefs to leave Kansas City and come to Dallas and join the Cowboys. And we got Stephon Diggs must have been really, really bad in that locker room for the Buffalo Bills to trade him to Houston. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's not just a football move. Like, that doesn't make sense. They don't even have a plan B. And I'm sure they'll draft somebody, but he's not going to be Stephon Diggs right away. At least I don't think so. So, yeah, I think you put everything together, and I think you're on the right track there saying that – you know, that he was probably a pain in their behind, you know, and at some point you just don't take a $30 million cap hit unless you're really, really tired of a guy. And is it okay that I don't like this move for either team? Because I think the Bills really weaken themselves when they're still a Super Bowl contender. And I'm not sure the Texans are getting what they think they're getting. I'm just being a contrarian a little bit, but if you look at Stephon Diggs' last 13 games last season, he averaged less than 10 yards a catch. He had three touchdowns. He did not have a 100-yard game. I believe his final – in those 13 games, it was like 68 catches for 636 yards or something like that. He was very average. He's 30 years old. It's not – look, there's a lot of reasons that might have happened. And offensive coordinator change, hidden injury, whatever. But it's also possible that Stephon Diggs is just at the backside of his career, and we don't really know it yet. So I don't think this has the impact people – are portraying it for the Texans, and I hate it for the Bills, too, because at least he gave them a number one guy. So I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out, but it certainly was interesting. There's no doubt about that.
The draft never disappoints. You got the first three teams on the board all need quarterbacks. Minnesota needs a quarterback. Sean Payton at Denver needs a quarterback, I believe. So there could be some wheeling and dealing going on here. Would it surprise you if the first four picks in the draft were quarterbacks this year?
No, not at all. Not at all. First three, I think almost have to be quarterbacks, right? Like we start there. You can't get the four until you get the first three. So I don't see any reason the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots pass on a quarterback. Unless they just really, really don't like these guys. If you're the Patriots at number three and you're just saying, we don't like McCarthy or May or Daniels or whoever's going to be there. You have to start with a quarterback at some point. You don't want to be drafting third every year. So I think the first three do. If I'm the Cardinals, I just take Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm sorry. I think he's special. I think he is as good of a receiver prospect as I've ever seen coming out of college. Like, there's just nothing that guy can't do. He's got the pedigree, obviously, with his dad. He lost C.J. Stroud as his quarterback, and it didn't matter at all. That impressed me. He just looks the part. I think he's special. Good receiver class, but to me, Harrison is a Hall of Fame future. It really has that kind of ceiling. I don't pass on that, but I think the Cardinals will. I think the Cardinals are going to trade back to one of these teams desperate for a quarterback like the Vikings.
Yeah.
Then the Vikings draft somebody at four, and then who knows? Like, at some point, the Broncos might move up to draft Bo Nix in the top 10. So we could see five in the top 10. It wouldn't really surprise me.
Big debate. And everybody seems to believe that Caleb Williams is going to be the first pick of the Bears. I would argue, I don't know football. You've probably forgotten more football than I'll ever know. But I just saw Jaden Daniels. Yes, he had two receivers who are going to be top 10 picks. But in the NFL, teams have really good receivers. But I saw him do things in the pocket. I saw him do things off script, and I saw his ability to run and outrun people. I don't know how Caleb Williams is better than him. You tell me.
Interesting. It's hard for me to argue. I think Caleb Williams' arm talent is kind of freakish. I think that helps him. But both guys have won a Heisman. Both guys have made tremendous plays. I guess I prefer Caleb, but I think it's closer than probably a lot of people think. I like Jaden. I think he had a tremendous year. He brings a lot to the table, especially with what you want in a modern-day NFL quarterback with the athleticism. He just does everything really, really well. I think whoever gets him, whether it's the Commanders or the Patriots or whoever, ends up with Jaden Daniels, is going to be really, really, really happy for a long time. I think he's a heck of a player. Like Caleb is too. I mean, he's got some baggage with him. I think a lot of these off-field stories are a little alarming at some point, but I don't discount that Jaden might end up being the better player. It's possible. I think it's close enough to where it would be a debate. I still take Caleb. I think he's just more of a prototype, I guess, that you like. But certainly, I can't argue with what you say. Like, it might turn out that way that Daniels ends up being the better of the two.
They could all be very, very good. There's something in the back of my mind that people are going to be thinking, okay, well, here comes Caleb Williams. He is the next Pat Mahomes because he throws it sidearmed. He does this, that, and the other.
Right.
That's an awful lot to live up to and for people to expect from any player.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but I'll tell you this, and I hate doing that. I hate, like, oh, this guy's Patrick Mahomes, because there's only one Patrick Mahomes, right? But I went to go see USC play at Colorado this year, and there were some plays where I said, yeah, I've seen that before on Sundays. He can do things that are just uncanny and special, and it's not that. I think that part of his game is unanimous. Everybody knows that he can make plays out of structure and all that kind of stuff. I think what's going to make him either NFL success or failure is how he adapts to the pocket. Can he stand in the pocket and make plays and not always want to bail out and try to make those off schedule plays? I think that's going to be the difference. If he can master that part of the game, and he certainly can, I don't see why not. If he can master that part of the game, I think he's going to be one of those guys who's an MVP candidate one day. Yeah, he's got that kind of talent, because we all know he can do things, kind of these uncanny plays that not many other guys can make. Can he make the simple plays? Can he make the down, first and 10, hit your guy in a slant and get 6 yards type of play? I think that's going to be what kind of separates him or doesn't.
Frank Schwab with us. This J.J. McCarthy phenomenon now that's happening. Here's a guy that wasn't even on the radar. And I just wonder how much Jim Harbaugh saying he's the best at playing the quarterback position in this draft did to help elevate it. Now they're talking, McCarthy may go, who knows, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know. What do you think of J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, I do think it's could start as high as two. Like you said, I think the Commanders, there's enough smoke there that leads me to believe the Commanders are at least interested. I don't know that they're going to do it, but it wouldn't completely blow me away if they did either. I don't know. He's the one guy among these, top four that I'm kind of like, I don't know. But NFL people love him. They do. It's, we always have this misnomer of, oh, he's rising up draft boards. He's not rising up anything. He was already there. It's just the NFL draft media really didn't know about it. And
right.
Starting to catch up to the fact that the NFL loves J.J. McCarthy and all that he does. Obviously had a great, great year. I mean, he led that Michigan team as well as he could lead it, won a national championship. It does bring a lot to the table. I'm interested to see what he does in the pros. I'm not sold on him per se, but if he lands in the right situation, he could be a success. And guy's a lot smarter than me. I have the opinion that he can be a really, really good NFL quarterback. So maybe that's maybe that will happen. As high again, if he goes number two, I don't think anybody should be totally absolutely shocked by that.
I'm with you, Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports. There's been a lot of activity with free agent movement, the draft coming up. In your opinion, which teams have gotten better through the end of the season and to now with some acquisitions, if anybody?
There's a few, and I think that one, the entire NFC North, except for the Vikings. The top three in the NFC North, I love what the Lions have done to bolster their defense, getting DJ Reader for the middle. It's not a sexy, it's not going to sell jerseys to get a defensive tackle, but that guy solves a lot of their problems in the middle of their defense. And they've added other places too. The Packers, I think Josh Jacobs is going to be a really, really good fit in their offense. Xavier McKinney was a fantastic safety signing for them. And then the Bears have done, it's hard to find a receiver. It's really, really hard. And in two straight off seasons, they've gotten creative to get DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. I love that for them. I love some of the moves they've made. I think NFC North is going to be really, really fun this year. I think the Lions are the best team, but I don't think the other two are that far behind, really. I think that those two teams can really compete. So that's where it starts. And you almost have to say the Texans. As much as I can sit here and kind of downplay the Diggs thing and kind of be skeptical about what he has left, you still have an offense that's going to be tremendous, and they've added a ton to the defensive line, too. I think the Texans are ready to take a big step forward. So those teams stand out to me as some of the ones that really, I think, did well for themselves this offseason.
Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. I don't know what Kansas City is thinking. What do they do now? They're trying to make improvements to Arrowhead. They're trying to build a stadium for the Royals, and the masses said, you know what? We're tired of shelving out all this money. No, we don't want it. No. So now what?
Yeah, and I think that the leverage there is Kansas. They're not moving to Dallas. We all know that. That's ridiculous. That's not happening. Jerry Jones wouldn't let it happen, even if the Chiefs wanted to do it. So we could stop with that right now. But I think it's interesting when, if people know anything about, that the geography down there is Kansas City is – the Arrowhead Stadium is barely in Missouri. I mean, you pass Arrowhead Stadium exit, and you're going to be in Kansas in a couple of minutes. So – for Kansas to be like, hey, we'll give you some money to come over here, and it's not really that crazy of a move. it's a few miles, basically. I think that adds to the intrigue here, but I'm sick of it. I really am. Like these billionaires, and look, I just did a story on the Forbes list. The Forbes billionaires list came out, the 2,500 billionaires in the world, right? And in the sporting world, the top nine billionaires are all NFL owners. NFL's just printing money at this point. Why are they asking for tax money from everybody? I get it. If you can get it, go for it. But it's just something seedy and bad about it to me. Like, no, pay for your own stuff. The NFL's making, last time they filed publicly, about $22 billion a year. What's keeping them from being like, oh, the Chiefs need improvements at Arrowhead Stadium? Okay, well, here's $750 million. What's Clark Hunt? Clark Hunt was on that billionaire's list as his family. What's keeping him from being like, okay, I'll invest in the product because we can't just outsource the expense and then privatize the profit all the time. And that's what the NFL gets away with. All these sports teams get away with. because they just threatened to move. I'm dealing with, like, I'm a Milwaukee guy. You know that. I was born in Milwaukee, big Brewers mm-hmm. fan, and the Brewers were like, hey, yeah. we might have to relocate if you don't give us money for stadium improvements. It's like, why can't you pay for that? Why are taxpayers always in the spot of having to pay for this? So I kind of applaud the people of Missouri in saying, no, this is ridiculous. Right. The Chiefs literally are just making money hand over fist every single year. We are not paying for renovations, Arrowhead Stadium or their facilities or whatever they're trying to get. I applaud that because it's gone too far. It's ridiculous that these owners keep asking taxpayers for money.
Clapping for Frank Schwab. Absolutely. Absolutely. Frank, were you one of the 12.3 million that watched Iowa and LSU play a women's basketball game?
I actually missed that one, not because of choice. I just had other things going on. But I'll tell you what, I don't. This is going to overstate it, but I think you're going to know what I mean. I think Caitlin Clark, when we talk about her in basketball terms, she's more like Tiger Woods to me in that she has completely elevated the consciousness of a nation to an entire sport. And you rarely see that. I mean, we're talking about no matter how great Patrick Mahomes is, he didn't improve the NFL's bottom line that much, if that makes sense. You know
That's
what
right.
I mean? Like,
That's
people are going to watch it. We're watching the NFL long before Patrick Mahomes, or we'll watch it after Patrick Mahomes. I haven't seen anything except Tiger like Caitlin Clark, who has entirely changed women's basketball in terms of interest, in terms of viewership, in terms of, and we'll see if they can keep this going afterward. I know LSU, big women's basketball, kind of market down there too, and there's interest. But I think it will continue. I think that of those 12.3 million, maybe you're not going to get 12.3 million for an Elite Eight game next year, but if you get 10, if you get 9, because people tuned in and really liked the product and noticed other stars like Angel Reese and all of them, I think that it's really, really good for the sport, and it'll continue after Caitlin's gone. But again, I've really rarely seen something like Caitlin Clark, who completely and entirely changes the scope of an entire sport. It's impressive.
Yep, I'm with you. And never thought I'd ever say this, but there's more star power. And I think more people know the names of the best players on the women's side of the bracket than they do on the men's side. And I thought I'd never say that, but I think it's true. Anyway,
I think so too.
Frank Schwab.
I think LeBron put it well, saying that the one and done has kind of done this. It's, to men's
Absolutely.
Basketball, where the women's game is what the men's game used to be.
You're absolutely right. LeBron's right, too. Frank Schwab, you're the best. I know you're busy. The NFL draft's coming up, but we appreciate some time today, buddy. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the ball games this weekend.
Absolutely, Jordy. I appreciate it.
You're the best. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. Back to wrap things up. Oh, what a day it was in college basketball on this day years ago. We'll tell you all about it next.
This is... Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana's sports station on YouTube.
All right, we are back to wrap things up on this Thursday edition. Let's get the final tabulation, James, on our poll question of the day, please.
Yeah, Jordy, so throughout the show, we've seen a little bit of movement for our poll question of the day when it comes to will the Pelicans avoid the play-in tournament. Vast majority have said no. Initially, it was about 80%, I believe, when we first started, when we got the first couple of votes. But as the day have gone along, it's decreased. Still, vast majority have said no at 65%, but we have increased to yes at 35%.
All right, so James Mesh, are the Pels going to be in the top six, yes or no?
The way that everything is played, B.I. still uncertain, and the rest of the schedule for other teams as well in the West, I will say no. They will have to fight in that final game against the Lakers, and I think they end up losing that one, so they have to play in the play-in.
I think they're going to be in the top six. I think some of those other teams have some tough schedules. I think they'll catch a break or two with some players sitting out and resting. Call me the eternal optimist. What the heck? But we appreciate everyone for their votes on X and on Facebook. Oh, what a day it was. Never thought I'd see this happen. April 4th, 1983, 41 years ago, Derek Wittenberg throws one up from deep. It's an air ball. Lorenzo Charles rebounds it, dunks it as time expires to lift the Wolfpack of North Carolina State pass Hakeem Olajuwon and those Houston Cougars 54-52 to win the national championship game. Houston was the prohibitive favorite. The only other mismatch ever was when Villanova upset Georgetown. Raleigh Massimino and the Villanova Wildcats in Rupp Arena beat Georgetown with Pat Ewing and company when they shot 83% for the entire game. It was amazing. Talk about full circle. Everybody knows Jim Valvano was the coach. He ran around looking for a hug. Boo Corrigan stood under the basket working as a ball boy. He's now North Carolina State's athletic director, and the Wolfpack are back in the Final Four on this day 41 years ago. Thanks to all of our guests, Bill Frankes, Matthew Bruni, Todd Walker, Frank Schwab. James, thank you. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. Until next time, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Be healthy. Be kind to one another. By all means, be happy. AFR is next. Enjoy the rest of this gorgeous Thursday. So long, everybody.